All right, we're now in our Board of Commissioners meeting. And as always, we start with either a prayer, reading, or a thought, and also the Pledge of Allegiance. And we look to the audience, if anyone would like to volunteer to help with a prayer, reading, or a thought and Pledge of Allegiance. I do have one volunteer already for the pledge, so that one's taken. So I'm looking for any volunteers for a prayer, reading, or a thought. Anyone from the audience? Thank you, Jim. Come on up.
Heavenly Father, we are grateful that we can meet together in this government meeting and a meeting for the people to be here to participate with our elected representatives. And today we ask for thy spirit to be with them and with everyone here in attendance, that they will have support one another for the cause of freedoms we enjoy. We're grateful for all that we have. Bless those in our community who suffer from health, from the pandemic, or other issues in their lives, that thou might be merciful upon them. These things we thank thee for in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please pledge with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Thanks for participating in that. Commissioner Gardner, you're up.
All right, give me 1 second as I pull this up. This is going to be for the employee of the month. And give me 1 second while I pull it up. I'm really excited to get to announce the Employee of the Month, not only in my first commission meeting, but because I think this person is a fantastic employee for the county. So the employee for the month is Jay Sundberg from the IS division. Is Jay there? So, Jay, it is my privilege to get to embarrass you and read the fantastic letter that nominated you as our Employee of the Month. Before I do that, I want to say that when I first came in as an elected official, Jay was fantastic at helping us navigate through a lot of things. And as someone who's really focused on innovation, the IS department has been absolutely fantastic, and Jay has been there every step of the way. So I absolutely am honored to be able to present this. He said, on Saturday, January 23rd, the county experienced a serious database hardware failure. By Sunday, this failure had brought down many of the county's most important systems that rely on those databases. Jay led the recovery team in IT and worked through the night, barely leaving his office for more than 30 hours, recovering data and restoring systems one by one. Largely because of Jay's Herculean efforts, many county employees had no idea of the failure. By Wednesday, most of the major systems were back online without hardly a hiccup. This recent heroic episode is just one of many instances over his 38 years of service where Jay's immense technical knowledge and experience were directly responsible for making Utah County a better place to live, work, and do business. In just the last few years, Jay has made key contributions to allow the recorder's office to receive digital recording, automate election results so that our website reflects results in near real time, and modernizing the county tax notice and online payment processes, and so much more. Jay has been the sentry that protects one of Utah County government's most important and vulnerable assets, its data. Jay deserves to be recognized for this unheralded yet essential role. He deserves to be Utah County's Employee of the Month. And that was from Patrick Warrow. And then there's another one that says, over the last 40 years, I have worked with many programs that Jay has created, updated, and maintained. He has incredible knowledge, talent, and the foresight, and has made Utah County's base programs the best there are. In 2020, a second e-recording vendor wanted to come online with the recorder's office. Jay had previously worked with this vendor and the program he wrote was still available. With Jay's help, we were up and running within a few days of the request. In 2014, there was a change to the state code for water rights. Because of programming Jay had created back in the 80s, when the recorder's office started the computer abstract, the information that was now required to index was already being captured and stored, and it was a matter of turning on a specific field to show the data. We were compliant in a matter of hours. Jay is a great friend and asset to Utah County. He is not one to be in the spotlight and get accolades, yet he is the most deserving of the highest accolades. I am happy to add my joy to this nomination for Employee of the Month, Andrea Allen, a recorder. And as the former clerk auditor, I would add to that, that on election night, when we were all up late processing results, Jay was with us every step of the way and made sure that not only were our results posted and posted well, but even the clerk auditor's office has received recognition and awards for the way that we give election data, and Jay was integral in every part of that. So I absolutely am honored to be able to present Jay Sundberg, Employee of the Month.
Come on up, Jay. Here's your chance for at least a half hour speech, or less.
Thanks, Amelia, for those nice words and for the, and I guess that was Andrea, the second one. Thanks for your support. Thanks for the honor. I want to thank my, those I work with, my co-workers that are here with me today. They're awesome. And just thanks.
Greg. Okay. Fantastic. Now we'll move to our the rest of our agenda. You'll notice that our consent agenda is empty, but we're going to fill that. I would assume that we're going to fill that. Alice is hoping that we fill that. And so we're going to go through a process of looking at our regular agenda and placing things on the consent agenda. Everything will be placed on the consent agenda unless we pull it off for discussion. And so we're going to go through the process now of pulling things off or leaving things on our regular agenda, which we'll identify. So if you have an item and the item is not placed on our regular agenda, then it will be approved, agreed to, ratified, or whatever the language is that is on the agenda. So let's start with items on the agenda one. Let's go 1 through 20. Items that you'd like to identify to stay on there.
I'd like to have agenda 6 and 8 moved to closed session.
Want those tabled? So agenda items 6 and 8 to table, is that what you're saying?
Yes, tabled to closed session.
Okay.
Do we need to table 8? I think it's just a temporary appointment. Do we need to table that or can we just vote on that?
We can... let's go ahead and table it. We typically table these for closed meeting. So let's table that. And then item number Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say item number 3.
Item number 3. Okay.
Yeah.
If we could also have item number 5 and Jim's here. So, I'm not pulling, I mean, we can have more discussion on it, but, I'd like to have Jim come up and talk about item number five. And then I don't mind leaving item number nine on consent, but there, the on the document, it has the time wrong for the BOE meetings from January to mm-hmm. present. It has it at, it has them at 2 o'clock.
I noticed.
And they're actually at 3. And so if it's just noted that those are changed to reflect actually what happened, I don't have a problem leaving that on consent if the other commissioners are
I agree with that. Yes.
Okay. Commissioner Gardner, are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay. So we'll leave that on consent with that change. Any others to item all the way through to item 20? Okay. Items 21 through, let's go items 21 through 40. Any on items 21 through 40?
I need to annotate one thing about item 20. It has the former clerk auditor's name there as the officer for the clerk audit. And I think there's a few others that way as well. We need to change that to the interim.
On the signature line, is on that what you're talking about? Line,
yes, it shows that Amelia Powers as being the clerk auditor for signature line.
I'd suggest you could just, in your motion, say that you know you'd authorize the signing with that edit or update. I don't think that's a substantive update or.
It's not substantive. It's just administrative.
Make sure that the actual documents that get sent to the cities have the appropriate signature lines
Correct.
And whatnot.
And that would be for general for because we've got a whole bunch of them on this. So any of those that are on there, Alice, you can probably just
we can
change
make sure
those.
That's all correct.
I felt deeply offended because it has K as my middle initial instead of V in one of them. So well, thank you, Alice. I feel better.
Now that the world's back in order. Okay. So we leave it on consent for that to happen. Are you fine with that?
I'm fine with that. And the others, yes.
Okay. Okay, so 21 through 40?
Yeah, 21. There are some that all of them had an amount that the county was going to be reimbursed except for 21, 22, 27.
You want to hold those?
I'd like to hold those.
21, 22,
27,
27,
34,
34,
36,
36,
40,
40. This meeting's getting longer and longer.
And 42. Those do not have amounts.
42. Okay.
What the county's going to be reimbursed.
Okay, we'll hold those. Okay, 41 through 45. So we're holding 42.
Yes.
It's been suggested that we strike items 44 and 45.
I agree.
So we can leave that on consent for 44 and 45 to be stricken?
Yes.
Okay. And then items 46 through 49 are our closed meetings. And all I have notice for is for 46 and 49. Are there any other items, any other closed items, commissioners?
None that I'm aware of, no.
So then
we can strike 47 and 48.
We could leave on consent to strike items number 47 and 48.
Yes.
And then we can approve and set a date, time, and location for a closed meeting to discuss item number 46 and 49 at today's date at this location following the completion of our regular agenda. Okay. Is that good?
I concur.
Okay, so Alice, to recap, do you want to just go through the recap on that, what you have?
Sure, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, I have held three.
I don't know if Amelia or if Commissioner Gardner can hear you.
Okay, I have held items number 3, number 5, tabled number 6, number 8, hold number 21, 22, 27, 34, 36, 40, 42. We're striking 44, 45, 47, and 48.
Okay. And we set the closed meetings for the other two. Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you. Now we'll go back to item number three. It's an annual contract renewal with the Utah State Courts for the Sheriff's Services. And I think, Commissioner Gardner, I think you held this one.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions on that. One is, I noticed that amount hasn't changed in several years. So I'm wondering, when the building that was expanded and it's significantly larger now, did our contract increase as we were required to increase the amount that we that it cost us to provide security for the court? So that's one question. The second would be, with this amount not changing, as inflation goes up and the cost for us to provide that service goes up, is the state not continuing to compensate us for that? So these are just basic questions. Not saying that I won't approve it, but I want to ask these questions and I want to have a better understanding of this. I feel that this oftentimes is an unfunded mandate from the state, and I would like to have a better understanding of it.
It is a partially funded, unfunded mandate. I know that we've been up to the committees, and I don't know if Eldon wants to come up and talk to other sheriff, but we have been up there to the state on a repeated basis asking for more funding, you know, in this area, and they're reluctant to do so. I'll just put it that way. We have asked, and I think that they're trying. At least the one guy that was with us at the committee hearing has asked. That's why I think the numbers are the same year after year, and they do fall. I mean, it's their court. They always say to us, "Well, it's your people too, so you have to fund it." So it is falling short.
Yeah, so to answer your questions, Commissioner, I believe, was it 2 years before the court went into session, our amount dropped. And then when we went into the new court building, it went back up, but it was kind of a, you know, like buy one, get one free deal, where it never went back up to where it was. So they dropped us, we got a little more, but we've never made it back up to where we were at one point. Is that correct? And then just to echo what Commissioner Lee says, this is something we work on every year. Lieutenant Packer, he's my guy on this. He goes up to the state capitol every legislative session, and this is one of his top issues, is that he works with the legislators to try to get more money. We're at their mercy on this. There's other things that come up. You'll see that you've probably seen already, such as, you know, this year there was another bill that came forward on another state mandated thing on a fire marshal position that frankly we don't need, but the state's going to make us pay more money for it. So we really do need, I'm frustrated because I need help with these things. We go up and fight it. I don't know at the county what we're doing. I know we're not a member of UAC anymore, so our lobbying power has been diminished. And I think sometimes we don't look at the big picture of having a bigger voice to try to deal with these issues. And we need help. There's just a couple of us up there fighting these issues, and we just keep getting more mandates.
What's the percentage of that? What is it? I think $1.8 million.
It's about 20%, but it's roughly between 20 and 30. If you back out some of our judicial costs that really wouldn't fall into the court money, you're gonna land somewhere between 20 and 30% of that budget is what we're getting from the state.
So that 1.8 is 20% or 30%?
Roughly
1.4
of our total costs. So our actual cost is closer to 5.5.
What is it? Seven.
Seven.
$7 million.
I think that's what I saw on there, yeah.
Yep.
Okay, yeah, I think just moving forward, I would love to see, you know, we can work with you to get a better idea of what that's looked like historically, and then be more engaged in helping make sure that even if we're still footing some of the cost, which makes sense because it's our people too, as inflation goes up, their portion of the cost should go up as well. And so I'm very interested in working with you on that issue and getting you the help you need there.
And I agree 100% and would love the help.
Yeah, I had a bunch of questions on this, but I got them all answered before I had some conversation. I'm wondering though, since we're on this topic, I know we put the costs in there, which is basically salary, but we don't really show the benefits, you know, or anything. It's just a salary base that's on there. And I get it because it's just it's a plug number. So it doesn't really matter, but it'd be nice to show all of the costs, you know, in the sense of, well, I don't know if you can. Maybe I'm just talking too much on this one, but I'm ready to move on.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve agenda item 3.
I'll second that motion.
I got a motion and a second to approve agenda item number 3, the contract there, a renewal. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Okay. Jim, item number 5 is to approve and authorize the signing of an agreement between Utah County and the American Freedom Festival. It's good to have you.
Good. And you have the agreement. We talked about it last time and appreciate it being prepared. I was just here just to give you an update probably if I could, and then answer any questions you have, if that's okay. Once again, for the record, Jim Evans, Executive Director of the Freedom Festival, and I've been with you too, and new Commissioner Gardner, welcome. It's good to see you. Look forward to meeting you in person. A couple things here. I'm basically here representing, as I thought about this, it's not me. I'm representing the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volunteers who help pull this festival off every year, the 500,000 plus people that participate in the festival. As we've looked at it, more than $20 million of benefits to the community when we hold this festival every year. So as I mentioned, and Paul, we came a month or two ago, we were looking forward to it. I'm here to tell you we are having the festival this year. Many things are being prepared and planned right now. Once again, in fact, that tomorrow is the National Day of Prayer, and that's where we're partners with many others in the community on that. So just to make you aware of that, that day, 6:30 in the morning, up Provo Canyon, they'll have a flag ceremony and a couple of prayers to kick it off at noon. There'll be an online service, but at 7 p.m., the community church just down the street on University Avenue, the first 150 people can get in there to participate in that. And I think there's some speeches and musical numbers and prayers as well. So that starts that we have the Mayor's Prayer Breakfast, June 4th. We have the Balloon Fest, Patriotic Gala, Freedom Run Parade, military vehicles, Colonial Fest, all the different things that you used to and love to participate in every year. One thing new this year, the Hope of America, as you know, we usually hold that in the Marriott Center where we have thousands and thousands of fifth graders come every year to sing all the patriotic songs about our country and freedoms we enjoy. This year, the Marriott Center is under renovation starting, but they aren't allowing people in there, and they're renovating at the floor, doing things, and UVU, they're changing the seats out. So we had our committee get industrious this year on May 22nd at 7 p.m. in Rock Canyon Park. We're going to converge on Rock Canyon Park, and with all the permits, of course, and we're going to have a Hope of America. There will be a big screen. The families are going to join together on blankets, and they're going to have a sing-along as they sing the songs of Hope of America. So that's on the 22nd of May. We, next week, should be announcing our talent. We're just signing. I don't want to announce that today, but we're finalizing the contracts, and there'll be some talent that all of you know and love throughout the years. We have some thrill acts. We're working on getting the jets to fly over, all the many things that we have. So just want to thank you for the support you've given us as commissioners in the county over the years. And we look forward to being back this year with our America's Freedom Festival here for Utah County and for America. So thank you. I just asked if there are any questions on the agreement you have. It's very similar to the agreements we've had in the past with you, where we have you not only help sponsor the festival, but as a county, you help sponsor, promote the gala, which honors our citizens who have been great patriots or served their community. We'll honor some great ones again this year. And also you help with the Colonial Fest and those things we have at Sierra Park with the vehicles. And so I'll stop talking now and just ask if there's any questions.
There's only one question, and I think Public Works is here. I noticed on the diagram that it goes, I mean, we have had some conflict in the past with how far up this road we go and then block it off. And we've been resistant in the past to blocking it off further than this road that intersects, which on this, I see it goes up further. And so I was just,
I've got some good news for you. I was looking when they sent me this diagram, we are not having the carnival this year, which is where that's blocked off a lot for a lot of the different events around here. And we'll certainly work with them to move it where we need to be. But we aren't having the carnival this year. We're focusing on the vendors and the entertainment and the food vendors.
Okay.
But not a carnival this
year. So you'll still be out here on our grounds, though?
We'll be on the grounds where we normally are.
But over here on this side.
The only thing that will be over there are the dumpsters where they come and empty, take the garbage away, but it won't be blocking the road. So that road this year will be open. It's just right over here.
Okay.
So that's just a correction that we've just happened. So.
Yeah. In fact, any approval today, if it could be approved, subject to removing that part of it, then we'll just take that part out of it.
Yeah. And, okay.
Before we
good.
Happy to do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all you do on it. I mean, it's a wonderful festival. I think everyone's anxious to get out and celebrate. And
we are. People are calling. They're anxious, and we're grateful for your support as citizens, as a county, as county commissioners. So thank you for considering this today.
Any other questions or comments?
No, sir. Thank you, Jim.
One more thing. I'm sporting the new Freedom Festival pin this year, and it's a pin that shows the Statue of Liberty and the Twin Towers. As you know, this year is the 20th anniversary, believe it or not, of 9/11. And we felt as a festival that we wanted to recognize that on our pin this year. So I actually have given your commission chair here pins for all the commissioners to have. There's one that's white, black, red, and blue, and so you can use those for yourselves and others. But once again, we thank some sponsors this year that actually paid for the cost of making the pins so we could share those with people to remind ourselves of our freedoms and what we're grateful for and for those who have died and what they've done for our freedoms that we have today. So that's what the pin is this year. Thank you. Thanks.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Okay, any a motion with an amended change to it? In order?
I'll go ahead and make that motion to make that and annotate the changes that was just described.
Meaning that
I'll second that motion.
Yeah, the road will be eliminated from the plan. Okay. And I'm sorry, Commissioner Gardner, did you second that?
Yeah, I second that motion.
Okay. I got a motion and a second to approve and authorize the signing between the agreement between Utah County and the American Freedom Festival with the changes noted. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Thank
you. Okay. Number.
We could probably take these in as one, yeah. Are you referring to the?
Let me get to, yeah. So number 21 is the next one we have, mm-hmm. which is to approve and authorize a resolution assigning, authorizing the commission to sign an interlocal cooperative agreement, which is 22, 23. It just have different cities that we're doing that with.
Yes.
So go ahead, Commissioner.
I was on the all but these seven cities. Attached is a breakdown of the costs associated with holding those elections. And I noticed that these other seven cities do not. And do we have that available that we could integrate and make part of today's agenda? Or is this something we have to pursue separately and continue those seven on next week? If we have them, I don't want to delay.
So each of the ILAs, interlocal agreements, with each of the cities has an attachment to it called an Exhibit B. Exhibit B is called out in Section 4 of the ILA resolution. Section 4 talks about the responsibilities of the parties in the agreement. And so one of the things that it references is that the city will pay the actual cost of administering the election to the county in the amounts contemplated under Exhibit B. Exhibit B is designed to be an estimate, kind of a prediction. Independent of the interlocal agreement, cities are under a statutory obligation to pay for the actual cost of the election. So there's no wiggle room. Under state law, when a city enters into an agreement for the county to run the election, the county shall charge the actual costs and the city shall pay the actual costs. But just as a service to the cities for their budgeting process, we gave them an estimate of what we thought it would cost, and that's what the Exhibit B is you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't know why some of these agreements didn't have the Exhibit B that's associated with it attached digitally. All of the agreements as given to the cities included those Exhibit Bs. The actual cost is pursuant to a formula. So we kind of analyzed the cost of the various services that are provided for each municipality and based on the number of registered voters they have, what their cost would be. So that's to say that every one of these agreements does have an Exhibit B. The cost charged to the cities is pursuant to that formula. So it's fairly uniform across the batch of cities. I just don't know why these particular Exhibit Bs aren't showing up in the system.
I'm just thinking it's like most contracts you have, even if it's an estimate, right. You have that built into the contract.
These agreements still do specify that estimate is the maximum cost. So that wording may need to be changed so that would be the actual cost and to remove that cap. Otherwise, there's a cap in the agreement.
Which we did. We are contemplating agreeing to a cap.
When we originally came up with those costs, we overshot that cap so that they could plan for their budget cycle based on the high amount. But our costs, I can't imagine our costs being higher than that because the only thing would be a disaster, and in which case the Lieutenant Governor's office would come in and help us cover those costs. So yeah. that even though it says max, we're fairly confident that that's not going to be an issue.
I'm just saying it by contract, that would be the cap. So if it should exceed that, we'll have to eat the cost.
Right.
So how do we?
Paul Jones. I was just going to comment, and Josh mentioned it a second ago, that each of these agreements has gone out to the various cities. And when they did, they included the Exhibit B. I confirmed that with the clerk auditor's office. So it would only be appropriate that we agree to the same agreement that the cities agreed to. I don't know that it would be a terrible deal to hold these and let us re-upload the agreements or to simply prove these in the same form that the cities agreed to them in, which would be with the Exhibit B attached as agreed to by the cities. But I think those are our two options.
Well, I mean, the risk on this is really with the cities. I mean, they've already signed it, and they already agreed to it. That's not really a risk.
Right.
The only other risk we have is if it does go above, which if it's been estimated that we're not going to go above that, then that's the risk that we take as a county if it does go above.
And I can say that in 2019, we had two dynamics that were in play, maybe even three. One was there wasn't good records from 2017 as to actual cost. What we billed the cities was what we billed the cities, but we couldn't necessarily discern if that was the cost. And then, you know, of course, we had adopted vote by mail more permanently in the county by 2019. And so, you know, that increased the costs. And then, you know, we had new systems in place. So we didn't actually know going into 2019 what it would cost. But now that we did 2019 of city elections, we have a very good idea of what it costs. And that's how we built our estimate for 2021. So we're very dialed in and confident that not only is it a guaranteed max, but it will be the max that we would incur in cost. We believe it'll be less. And there's some issues at play that we think we can actually save some money, you know, for the cities and that it won't even cost the max. So we're confident that the max is appropriate. And then, we'd agree with Paul. You can either have, you know, have these on a future agenda with the different document, or you could simply approve them pursuant to attachment of the Exhibit B for each agreement. When it comes to the commission for the actual signature, you can see each document. If there's an Exhibit B, sign them when they have the Exhibit Bs. We'll make sure the Exhibit Bs are part of the package that actually gets signed by Commission Chair.
So we're suggesting to go ahead and approve the package based on the fact that the cities did not return Exhibit B. Is that what we're saying here?
My understanding is they did return it, it just didn't get loaded to the system. Is that right?
Okay.
So they see it and they agree to it.
So I'll move to approve.
We've loaded into it.
Okay, I've got a motion to approve. Is there a second?
So there's no risk otherwise to the county beyond the maximum amounts that we've already issued and have already agreed, but just have not shown these copies.
Yeah, I need to, if I got a motion, I need to know if there's a second. Then we can have discussion.
If we make a motion to approve, then that would end discussion, basically.
But no, discussion could be after.
I'll make a motion that approve this.
I got a motion to approve.
And I'll second the motion.
Okay, now we can discuss it.
To your point about risk, Commissioner, the agreement does say that the cities agree to pay the amount invoiced by the county. So whether the Exhibit B calls out the estimated cost or not, they're agreeing to pay the amount invoiced by the county. So in terms of bottom line is cities will have to pay what we bill them. We just contemplate billing them something not to exceed the estimate in the Exhibit B. But we can commit that the documents that will actually be signed by Commission Chair will have the Exhibit Bs. It may have been that the cities omitted Exhibit B when they sent the document back to us because the Exhibit B was after the signature page. And sometimes what people will do is simply print the signature page, sign the signature page, send it back. So
I don't know if I've ever had a contract that I haven't read every line, even buying my house. So that's the only reason why I pause on this. Someone has a question.
If you don't mind. I'm Vaughn Pickell. I'm the Spanish Fork City Attorney, and I think Spanish Fork was one of the agreements you noticed with the missing Exhibit B.
Yes.
I verified that we did see the Exhibit B. We approved the Exhibit B, and I don't know why it didn't come back or if it did or if it didn't, but I know we approved it with it, so.
Okay.
Just for your information.
So just to clarify, I have a motion to approve, and I have a second. My confusion is, is that motion to approve just 21, or is it all of the ones that we have listed?
It's all of the ILAs that we have listed.
Okay.
And I envision that as well, yes.
Okay, so the motion is to approve and adopt the resolutions in 21, 22, 27, 34, 36,
40.
And 42.
Yes.
Okay, any other further discussion to it?
So the motion basically is that we approve this list pending the Exhibit B being attached for the chair's signature.
Yes.
Is that your motion?
Subject to
Commissioner Gardner?
Subject to.
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, approve them with the B being attached for the signature.
Okay. I've got a motion and a second then. Any further discussion? I'll ask one more time. All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Those pass 3-0. All right. Okay. That takes us to the end of that. We do have a couple of work session items. Latino America, and who's here to present on this one? Maybe we'll go to the second item, Ralph, come on up on this one. This is to discuss the departmental staffing plan, budget limitations, and alternate approaches to position management.
Okay, I'm Ralph Barnes with Human Resources. A couple department heads have come to me and asked about alternative ways to change, staffing plans during the year and how to utilize funds in their staffing plan that may or may not have been spent, primarily for a variety of reasons that there could be surplus funding in a staffing plan. And I talked about that with, the commission, and, we determined that this was probably the best way to, talk about this further is in a work session. So there's opportunity for everyone who's involved to ask any questions they may have. So some of the, questions that have been, brought to me are about, the staffing budget, and can the funding that was approved at the first of the year be fully utilized, regardless of the positions or if all the positions are filled or not? And I'll explain that further. The second item here is, would, the commission allow a staffing plan to be modified up to the approval amount of money without further approval? In other words, could a department head add a job without having to go for more approval from the commission if it does not exceed the amount of money that was approved at the beginning of the year? And then that leads to the question, if we allowed that, what would happen if the department had exceeded the budget? That's a pretty important question, because that really isn't an option. And then how would we look at the following years going forward if we took this approach? So those are some of the questions that came up when this was first talked about, proposed by department heads, and brought to the commission. So I'll, is there any questions before I go forward? Okay. So, currently, the staffing plan is set up each year, and that drives the budget. So in other words, whatever's in the staffing plan at a snapshot in time, usually at the end of the previous year, is used to drive the budget for the following year. And that's how we set the amount of money each one of the department heads gets to spend on, staffing. And each one of those, each one of those dollars is assigned to a position. So they're very, tightly connected. Anytime a department head wants to add a position, it has to be approved by the commission. That's currently how it is. If it was not approved in the budget and they want to ask for something additional, it has to be approved by the commission. It has to go to agenda. It has to be approved. If it's something that happens mid-year, normally what would happen is, the department head would, come to me and they would say, I want to add a position. And then I would say, well, if you want to add this position, you're going to have to remove a position. Unless there's some other source of funding that you know of that I don't know about, or, the commission. So normally that's how it would work. The next box here, states there are times that there is funding that's available. It could be another source of funding. It might be a grant. It could be revenue. There's a variety of things that can happen that can, provide mid-year funding, to add a position. That's not as common, however. And then the following year, again, we, take a snapshot of what's happening in the current year to set what is going to happen in the following year. And, typically there's a slight increase, built in for, wage increases, the merit increases, but it's follows, closely what was spent or what was budgeted in the year that we set, the budget for the following year. If a job is open during the year, department heads can, fill that at will, as long as they fill it with the same role and don't expend more money than was set for that role, they can do that at will. There isn't any restriction. They don't have to go back to the commission. So anyway, I just wanted to review how things are currently right now. That's how it happens currently right now. So any questions about the current process? Clear? Okay. So these are some of the ideas that have been proposed to me. And it really has to do with whether or not a department head has more funding in their budget than they are spending. And I'll explain to you why that happens. In the ideal scenario, you know, from the department head's side of things, they would love to keep all their positions that they have had approved, whether open or filled. And in some, you know, instances, they'd like to, you know, they would like to add a position, but utilize some of that funding that has been, you know, generated is probably the wrong word, but essentially not utilized because of usually something's open, and that's what has, you know, created that funding surplus. Under that scenario, you know, the department head would have to manage very tightly the actual cost to standard budget. In other words, they'd have to have their hands in it very tightly to, you know, to understand how they're moving these roles around to make sure that they leave something open, that they're filling something else, they're adding a position over the course of the year they can't go over. And then they also have to consider what's going to happen the following year, because there is a significant implication in, over time, how will they move these roles around? I realize that there's retirements, there's, you know, terminations that are always going on. And so there is a way to do this. It's just generally not very clean, because you're planning on an event that may or may not happen. But there is an average over time where you could at least set a pretty accurate estimate of what that would look like. One of the things that was, you know, talked about is if this was something that was allowed to happen, you know, the budget office really should have a look at this and say, yeah, it's okay. We're, you know, 25% into the year, they've only spent, you know, 20% of their wage budget. You know, therefore there is some money here that was approved that has not been utilized. So that's something I would feel more, you know, comfortable with. I don't think the HR department can necessarily have that type of, you know, dynamic detail. I'm not even sure if the finance department would have access to that at their fingertips at all times, but I think we'll probably get some input from them. And then, of course, what do we do for the next year? The easiest answer is, well, you take, you know, the baseline from this year, you add, you know, growth factor, you know, 2 or 3% to it, and there you go. This is what you have for the next year. You cannot exceed this now. So that would be an idea of how this, you know, could be approached. Any questions? Why do we have excess money? It's almost always because of the inability to fill a position, or for one reason or another, there's been a lag in time to fill a position. That's the most common reason. So, you know, departments in some instances have tried. They go into the year with open positions. We're halfway into the year. They still haven't been able to fill those positions, again, for a variety of reasons. So that's the most common reason that we have more funding in some of the departments than others. You know, turnover, there's always a lag time between when someone leaves and when they are filled. Sometimes that's extensive. Even though we can fill a role quite fast in HR these days, there is often a lag. And when we have someone leave who's at the, you know, top of the scale, it's very common for whoever's coming in to replace them to be in the lower end of the scale. It's just the nature of things. It's, you have a very senior employee who's retiring, you generally hire them with someone who is less paid. So anyway, those are the reasons why the department may have some funding that has not been utilized that was approved in their budget. So here's just a, let me just see what's ahead of this. So here's a, you know, quick example. Let's say and it kind of creates more questions than it answers, but let's say you have, you know, you have a department that has 3 unfilled roles since the first of 2021 that has saved $187,000, $74,000 year to date, but that would be the annual number. And they want to add 2 new roles at a cost of $99,000. They could do that and not exceed what they have saved, again, not utilized for the year so far. And there wouldn't be an issue, really, with exceeding what was set aside for the current year. Again, when it becomes, you know, tricky is, what about the next year? So they would have to be thinking ahead, who's going to retire next year? What roles am I going to have open next year? Am I going to keep this one job open and I'm just not going to replace it, as long as I need that to just help me keep this, you know, balanced out? So again, it requires ongoing management by the department head. And I think there would need to be some input from, you know, from the budget office to make sure that, and of course, you know, we would be involved too in HR, to make sure that, you know, the department head does not exceed what's been approved. But at the end of the day, it has to be the department head's responsibility to make sure at no time do they exceed what has been approved in their budget. And I, you know, the risk factor here is the way this would be set up is they could still fill the open roles that they are using to, you know, provide this. They could just adjust the timing and be very, you know, creative on how they do this so that they would not exceed. So yes, it can be done. In my opinion, it's hard, but I think it could be done. So here's just a risk list of, you know, pros and cons, and I'm hoping, you know, those in the room that would be involved maybe have some others they could throw out here. But the biggest, you know, pro is the department heads all the time come to me and say, hey, I wish I had the flexibility to use this money for this need I have right now. This is super urgent. Things have changed since the beginning of the year. I'd love to be able to hire this job. Or the needs of the public have changed. I really need this role now. And it would shave off some time going back to the commission for reapproval or for new approvals. So those are the things I see as a pro. You know, the cons, I do think there'll always be a risk of exceeding the budget. I think that even with someone who has extreme oversight and is working on this all the time, there's risk of going over when you have more jobs in the staffing plan that if they were all actually funded and filled, you would go over. So it requires a great deal of, you know, trust and oversight on the part of the department head to make sure that doesn't happen. There is extra work for my office. There's no doubt. We already maintain 1,200, you know, positions or so, 350, you know, job, you know, classifications. So it's just adding more work for us to manage and keep track of. If finance was expected to, you know, dynamically track spending and surplus during the year or non-spent funding during the year, I see that being challenging at best. If you're in a small department, you're not going to have this option. You just won't have the ability, because it's only the larger departments that have this churn or turnover that actually, you know, create this unutilized funding. A small department really would never be able to do this. And if you're creating a budget and it's not, you know, based upon fixed roles, over time it's likely to drift. And what I mean by this is you'll just see, no matter how much you try, things will start to move upwards. That's just my opinion, okay? It can be controlled, but I think it does require a lot of energy to do so. So I think I'll stop there for just a second and give you guys a chance to ask any, you know, questions or have anyone else that wants to make a comment on this. Thoughts?
My initial thought would be is how the department has responded to the pros and cons that you've outlined here.
This is the first time they've seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like the position's likely to drift. That would affect them directly as well as the rest of the county. How would they control that?
I do know, like I said earlier, you know, department heads do feel like they want to have more autonomy and the ability, you know, to control this. I just think we need, you know, guardrails in place to make sure that we don't have the risk of someone inadvertently going over what's been approved.
How about the extra work for HR?
It's just extra work.
Yeah, I mean, and we can like do it. Hours or?
You're probably talking hours. I mean, it all depends on how this spreads. You know, if it's just one department, it's probably not a huge deal. Again, where I'm more concerned, it's not so time consuming to add a position, you know, to the staffing plan, unless it's a brand new position that doesn't exist. Then it is very time consuming. Then we're talking a week, right, to add a brand new position, or even longer. What my concern is that, you know, working with the budget office, can they tell us that any one snapshot in time is, you know, does a department have unutilized funding in their wage budget, you know, because of these reasons? And could they give their okay or their, yeah, I think that's okay to go forward for you to add a position and spend that money? You know, I think that that's probably more of an ask because that's it's a moving target. So I think that's more problematic. Any comments? Rudy?
I'd like to hear Josh's thoughts on that. I think that that's something that can be done from the budget office, but maybe if I can hear his thoughts on that. Or Rudy.
I'd be happy to answer, but I'll defer to Rudy first, and then we'll follow up then anything else.
Yeah, I just happened to be looking in one particular budget that somebody had mentioned was looking to do something like this. And one of the issues that we're still working on resolving and is the timing of the posting of payroll to the general ledger. So right now, if I look at this one department, it looks like they've only spent 71% of their salaries budget for the year. But then I go dig deeper, and the last posting was for period three. Okay, so March. So March posting. And there's a lag that we've identified, and the commission and has agreed to provide some resources for getting and IT's working on getting, we have a position that somebody's working to get Workday transitioned into our general ledger system a little bit quicker. So that's one issue right there. So somebody could look at this and just say, oh, well, we have this big savings and we don't necessarily have it. But that's a known issue that we're working on resolving and shortening that time. If that weren't the case, my biggest concern, in all honesty with this, is if we're adding positions, we build the budget based upon what level of service we believe that we have, position levels. And if we're adding a position or two or three in there because we think we have a little bit extra money, what happens next year? What happens this year? It's one thing if it's a grant-funded position, for instance. You bring in a person and maybe you put them in as a time-limited person. When the grant goes away, they go away. But the problem is just keeping track of all the stuff and from year to year and seeing that there's natural growth in the payroll numbers. But then you see these increases coming along that it's a little bit harder to identify and track down than you would think. Once again, we're working on that piece of it right now with the new budget software and with our team in HR. We're working together with Workday and Questica to clean up some of that stuff. But still, that's the biggest issue in my mind, is that you're adding additional costs without additional revenues. If with the commission said, we want to go ahead and add a position and we'll pay for it out of general fund dollars, then that's your prerogative for sure. See, you know, you do that. If we have the money, you do that. But when we're banking on something that might occur, you may hire somebody and then all of a sudden you got these additional costs that come in. I just don't think it's a wise process to be borrowing unused payroll dollars. I don't believe it's in my personal opinion, using unused salary savings for buying other goodies and toys at the end of the year either. But that's another issue. That's not the question at hand here. But I don't think it's a very good practice.
I mean, I would add that I think the bigger question here that you have to think about is one of how you approach management of county operations. Are you looking at it like saying, we believe the level of operations that should exist is X? Or are you looking at it like saying, we believe the cost of everything we do in terms of operations should be X? Because right now what we do is we say, with a staffing plan, when you adopt a staffing plan, you're saying, I believe that the level of service, the demand on the operations of this department, requires 100 people of this type. And so you say, well, what's it going to cost for those 100 people next year? And you recognize that over time, that cost might go up as people move up in seniority. Of course, there's capping in some instances, but you basically pay what it costs because you say, well, that's the level of operations we're required to provide based on statutory obligations that we have, based on the demands of the community. And oftentimes, I think that the deliberations you have and these discussions about staffing are usually about level of operations. What's the right level of operations that we need to be prepared for? What's the right staffing blend to meet those operations? And then what's that going to cost? What this proposal is saying is, well, if I've got some money, then let me determine the level of operations that I'm able to handle because I could hire more staff. And so it's a totally different philosophy where you know, you're just looking at a number and you're hoping that that – because think about this. The cost of that staffing plan might generally go up over time. It typically does. But it might come down too because you might get, you know, a very senior employee retire and then you replace that person with a more junior employee. So year over year, you might actually see a decrease in the cost of a certain operational level in one department. And so you'd bank a little bit of a savings. Now, over time, that, you know, you might end up back where you were. You probably would. But you'd be anticipating potential savings. So, but with this sort of approach, you're going to say, no, we're going to commit to a certain financial obligation of staffing costs. But that might produce very different operational outputs. So I don't have a strong opinion one way or another. I think you just have to think intentionally about how you want to approach management of county operations. I think, you know, what's important is that you are responsive to the operational requests of the departments who are delivering these services. But I think you need to be talking about what services should we provide. Are we providing the right amount of services? Do we need to provide more services? Do we want to provide less services? And then determine what that's going to cost. And I largely, that's how things have gone historically. So,
I mean, and to that point, I think one of the issues here is you look at it and we may think that we need this certain position or positions in here to provide these services. And the question is, was that anticipated in what we were planning already, or is this an addition to that? And you guys are the ones that control what we have. And that's just how it is in government. It's you guys, the commission, the governing body is the one that controls the staffing level that we have. Now, you can decide that you want to have a different staffing level. You want to have different positions. If it's just shifting positions around, then we should be doing what Ralph has said we normally do, get rid of one, add this one at this level. But if we're looking at adding new stuff, it should be done with the not anticipating we're going to have savings to cover that, but with the intentional thought of we're going to fund this position regardless, so then we should make sure that we have that in the staffing plan. That's just my personal opinion from a budgetary standpoint. But your decision.
This is the reason why we bring in a work session is to have this conversation. The intent behind this conversation is to give the department heads more flexibility. And that's what the intent is to try to find a way that, because I've heard over and over, well, I'm the expert in this area. The commission is not necessarily the expert in what we need or what I need in my department. And so therefore, it seems like there's some stumbling blocks in the way when it comes to staffing level plans. And so I talked with Ralph extensively about this, and I said, what if we were trying to find a way to relieve those stumbling blocks and say, what do you need? Because to come back to the commission and say, this is what we need, and now we're looking at the money side of it and saying, well, wait a second, you don't have that in there. We haven't done that. It's a delay time. It really does take time to go down through that. So the intent is to find a way to relieve that, but still have parameters in place that make sense. What those are, I'm not sure. That's the reason why we're having a work session. What are the parameters that can be in place where the commission can feel comfortable and say, when we say risk of exceeding the budget, that scares me to death. I'll just tell you, when Ralph puts that up there, it makes me nervous. But I'm trying to find, I would like to see a way that we could put things in place to where the department head says, you know what, I had somebody retire and I'd like to hire a couple of 1,000-hour employees to take up that space for now. I don't need that one right now, but I really need this help down here on this level. And I need that for this year. And maybe next year it's going to change. That's kind of the intent, is to see if we can do that. And I know there's probably a hybrid of this that we can kind of work through with it. And I have talked with a couple of different department heads, one of them standing up here now. he's the hybrid one. We've had some discussions on what this can look like, and that's the intent, is try to find a way to not make more work for us, but to give flexibility to department heads as they're looking at their own staffing needs.
Go ahead, Chris.
Chris Polson, County Assessor. Being called hybrid is probably the nicest thing that anyone said to me all day.
Especially in golf, right?
Yes. As I was listening to what Josh was saying, I agreed with a lot of what Josh said, except for the last piece that he said. And he said, that's the way we've been operating. I don't believe this is the way we've been operating. And here's why. And I just want you to think about this for a minute. And Commissioner Lee and I had the initial discussion a little bit about this, but we haven't talked about this part yet. If you think about how a corporation is run, they have a CEO level, a board CEO level, and that's kind of the way the commission is right now. They have what's called a chief financial officer, and that's really about budget, and that's how that gets hammered in. But the piece that we don't have and we've never had is we've never had the chief operations officer. And I think everything that everyone has talked about today touched on that role, but that is a position we have never had. It's a position that creates the strategic management documents. It does forecasting. It tells you where you're going to be and all that. That sounds like budgeting, doesn't it? But it's really not, because you're actually looking at the operational side, because the operational side is actually communicating with the division heads and saying, what are you guys expecting? What do you need? Like, here's the growth projections.
You don't think that's Ralph?
Ralph is capable of a lot of things, but he is the HR director and he is consumed by HR.
I am.
Yeah. And he's very good at it. Kudos to Ralph for the excellent job he does for the county. But yeah, that is not a COO. He has his hands tied by exactly what he does. So that is something I want you to think about. Because the chief operations officer is really a strategic management tool. And they can help support the commission in so many ways. And they can help support all of the department heads in so many ways. I will tell you, as a department head, I do track my budget very closely, because in code, if I overspend my budget, I am personally liable for the difference. Yep. So that is a great incentive. Anyway, I know we'll probably talk more about this on Monday. So. Anyway, I just wanted to throw something out there to think about.
Okay. Thanks. So I do think that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Amelia. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on this. Like, I recognize that obviously we need to make sure that people aren't going over the budget, but also one of the things that was brought up, you know, sometimes, like they said, if someone retires, I think giving a department head the leeway to figure out how best to handle their situation. Also, situations change. I know that the recorder's office has had a huge increase in the amount of properties that have been recorded. I know that in a presidential year, the clerk auditor's office has a lot more need in the elections. In those years. And so I think giving department heads some leeway to say, hey, here's your budget. Don't go over it, but sometimes they don't need a full-time position. Maybe they need a couple of part-times to get through a time. I like the idea of giving that autonomy and saying, look, here's the budget that you have to perform the duties of your job. Let the department head determine how best to do that. I like the spirit of that, and I like where we're heading there. Just making sure that we have safeguards that they don't go over budget.
Yeah, and I think almost every case where I've had a department head come to me and feel, you know, strongly about adding a position, they've had a, you know, compelling case for why they need those positions. And Of course, it's always beyond what was approved the previous year. And I really do agree with what you just said, is that, you know, department heads want that autonomy. I think they have the skills and can be, you know, trusted. But I would only be, you know, comfortable if we had set up a process that could eliminate most of the risk. Because at the end of the year, if we're over, you know, that's... That would not be good. And if it carries into the next year, that's going to be even worse. So I see it being challenging. You know, Rudy just said to me, you know, perhaps adding a buffer in to each one of the departments. I realize that's, again, can make costs go up, not necessarily, but plan on, you know, have something planned that way. The other idea I was just thinking of is that, and I actually, you know, Bill and I talked about this, was if, you know, department head wants to add a position and they have something opened, instead of removing it from the staffing plan, we, you know, defund it. In other words, it's marked as one that can't be filled until it's refunded. I realize that's maybe just another, you know, step away from removing it from the staffing plan, but at least it still exists in the staffing plan. Mm-hmm. But it would have to be, we'd have to find out a way to fund that again. And that, again, would be up to the department head. Well, I have this funding, so now I want to hire that position. I guess I'm still uncomfortable with allowing all the positions, if we're adding new positions, to have funding available, at least on paper, if that makes sense. So that's one of my concerns still. Is there something you wanted to add, Rudy?
No. To Amelia's comment, I think one of the ways that we might be able to address this a little bit is if we had some money in the budgets for time-limited employees or something that could come in and fill a role on a temporary basis or something of that sort. You get somebody that's, you know, that's taken out of commission. Well, we put somebody in because we have some money that we can bring in a person that's time-limited, which isn't in the staffing plan. Because time-limited and part-time employees are not figured into the staffing plan. So that's one option that we can do. You know, it's another option. One of my cities did is that we assumed that there was going to be a certain level of vacancy throughout the year on an ongoing basis, and we would pull. I know, Bill, Commissioner Lee, you don't particularly care for these restricted funds, and I understand what you're saying. But you know, what we would do is we would restrict those for things like this that we could maybe, you know, utilize to help things in. Because what you're really talking about is most of the time it's short-term needs. Because if it's a long-term need, then we should be looking at the future and saying, this is what we have to staff on a continuous basis. So just a couple of thoughts.
Just really quick, this isn't that important, but it is important. The policy on the staffing plan would have to be modified slightly to allow for us to spend up to the max of the budget, you know, regardless of the staffing plan, you know, positions, because it's laid out here that the staffing plan, you know, develops the budget and so forth, and that you can't place an employee in a staffing plan unless it's been approved or in an open position. So anyway, just some things about the policy that's currently in place would have to be modified if we did, you know, take another approach. So that's just, you know, kind of a heads up. And then just some final, you know, questions that I'll just run through. And then if there's anyone else that wants to comment, or if we want to, you know, talk about this more on Monday in department head meeting, that's fine. Again, it's back to the original idea. Would, you know, the commission support, you know, staffing budget that is not, you know, tied to, you know, specific positions? Is the full utilization of every dollar that's been, you know, appropriated, is that a good or a bad thing? I don't know. Because normally, in a normal year, we will always have extra money. Always. In the wage budget, in the 1100 account. Is it possible for the budget office to track actual costs and any surplus through open positions? I guess we don't want to call it surplus. We want to call it unutilized. And then how would the end of the year, you know, staffing budget be, you know, created, and what controls would prevent exceeding the budget amount? So those are some of the things I see would really need to be answered before we you know, go forward. I think we all agree that we'd like to make it easier on department heads. We'd like to have less approvals. We'd like to be able to see them fill the positions they feel they need without having to go through a lot of hoops. But on the other side of the coin, fiscal responsibility is paramount. So that's really all I have. Any questions, comments, and thoughts?
I would mind seeing department heads have some engagement in this discussion.
Absolutely.
In the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll if it's okay, we'll bring it to the meeting on Monday. Department head meeting is Monday.
If that's enough time, if they need more time,
we can schedule another one.
Yeah, because it might be perspectives unique to one department. It would be different than another.
Yeah, this won't be solved in 1 week.
I'd like
for sure
to see it on the agenda. Yeah, I think we should discuss it on Monday in department head meeting. And if we don't come to a conclusion, then we could discuss it again.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to at least start the discussion on Monday.
Yeah. Yep.
Very good.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, Ralph.
Thanks.
All right. We'll go back to work session item presentation of proposed Latino America Festival. Is Edgar here?
My understanding is that they're not going to be doing that today.
Okay. All right. Then we won't have that presentation today. Are there any public comments? And Alice, do you see any online? No? Okay, seeing no public comments then, we will go into our closed meetings. Thank you.
The first one is item number 6. Yeah.
Okay, we're back into our open session. There are two items that we had tabled for discussion. One was item number 6, which is to adopt a resolution appointing to the Administrative Control Board of the North Fork Special Service District. Is there a motion?
I make a motion that we nominate R. Keith Payne to the North Fork Special Service District.
So that would be to appoint.
To appoint.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Appoint R. Keith Payne to the North Fork Special Service District.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that motion.
Yeah, I get a motion and a second to adopt the resolution of the appointment of R. Keith Payne to the North Fork Special Service District. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0. Number 8 is to adopt a resolution appointing to the Utah County a Utah County Budget Officer. Motion?
I make a motion that we appoint Josh Daniels to be the budget officer.
I second that motion.
Get a motion and a second to appoint Josh Daniels as the budget officer. All in favor say aye.
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 That passes 3-0.
Do we need to address item number 9 for the change of commission meeting times in public setting?
Let's just announce that. We'll announce that that the commission time has been changed from 3:00 to 2:00 on the Wednesdays, that we have listed the meetings that we'll be at, and hopefully we'll get an email out to the department heads. Maybe we can even send it out to the everybody list, and then it will be listed on our public notice anyway for the public to see.
And the same thing for Board of Equalizations going forward.
And same for the Board of Equalizations, yes.
You could post it on your Utah County Today Facebook or whatever accounts that you use, your public accounts.
Yeah, we could probably get that done from our PIO that is right at the end. Yes. I'll give him a call on that. Okay. Alice, would you post to the everyone email? Just a reminder of the time. Okay. All right. Final motion.
Make a motion to adjourn.
I second that motion.
Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you.